you have to do small, what seems like relatively insignificant things on an ongoing basis, and then you'll eventually benefit from that, through the compound effect. So I think creating a schedule that makes sense and sticking to it and doing the things that are most important. Like when I map out my day, I color code my calendar so that I understand, okay, these are the revenue generating activities that need to be done today. These are the admin activities that need to be done. This is time for me. This is time for loved ones.
Welcome to the Leaders of Tomorrow podcast. My name is Chris Thompson, your host of the show and the head coach of the Student Works Management Program. This is a show dedicated to young and ambitious entrepreneurs and ultimately the leaders of tomorrow. Each week, we will bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you create the future you know you deserve. Let's get started.
Well, I just had the opportunity to reconnect with one of our, past amazing multi-year operators, Andy Geshe. Andy is a real estate broker with RE/MAX in the Waterloo area, Kitchener-Waterloo area, and has been doing that for 25 plus years. And, just really, really at the highest level. We just had a fantastic conversation about coming out of school and kind of, life doesn't happen like a string. Oh, here's where we are now, really living our best life with a family and having a great lifestyle and earning great money. And then, oh, that's where I was. No, there's like, oh, how do I get there? And so we talked about the decisions that Andy made and the things that he pursued and the struggles early on as a real estate agent before he really started to do incredibly well and create the value for his customers and himself and his family and KW. So just loved our conversation, and it's really, really awesome to reconnect with our amazing alumni about their experiences post-Student Works. So again, why are we doing this? It's to share about our operators. It's to find other Andy Geshes. So if you know any amazing young leaders who are looking to step in to become leaders, we have this amazing program. You could share this podcast. You could have them send me an email at cthompson@studentworks.com. They could learn about our program at studentworks.com. Thanks so much. Have a super fantastic day. Andy, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Leaders of Tomorrow.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to sit down and chat with you and catch up a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's really awesome. Just to catch up for our leaders listening, I've been seeing Andy's posts and things online for really a decade plus in his really successful real estate career. And it's, Andy's golfing well, Andy sold another house, and I'm sure a good chance, maybe the same thing. Oh, we're doing this, we're doing that. And knowing that, Andy and I had a great relationship for 3 years as super, super operator, one of our top performers. And then it's just, we pick it up like that, what's been going on, but let's take you back to before Student Works, before Laurier. Who was Andy as a person?
Well, I appreciate you asking. It's many more years ago than I'd like to admit, but before coming on the podcast, I was thinking a little bit about that. But I want to think that I've always been an entrepreneurial at heart. And I was talking to my mom recently, and she reminded me of some of the silly things that I used to do. Like back in high school days, I would buy like candy in bulk, like sweet tarts, as an example, because our vending machine at school sold them for $1 or something like that. So I would buy the box from Price Club at the time and Costco nowadays, and then I would sell them for slightly less out of my locker than they could get them from the vending machine, but a little bit to make me some profit, and more than anything else, just to kind of keep me with as many sweet tarts as I wanted. Just small things like that. I was always looking for an opportunity to earn some type of income, but then also just to, I guess, feel satisfied from like an entrepreneurial perspective. I was always just looking for new ways just to get myself excited about, working at whatever it was that I was doing. So,
yeah. And that's so common with our leaders joining the program, is the all sorts of different entrepreneurial, how can I buy and sell something better? And so why don't you describe, what do you remember from your years, with Student Works and the lessons you took?
Yeah, I've reflected quite a bit on those days back in university, because I went to Laurier to study economics, thinking that I was going to go into finance, when I was done school. And I am still very interested and excited about, finance and investing and all of that. But while I was there, I had the opportunity to meet you, and Chad Grenier was my first manager, I guess. And then Richard Carroll came into the picture. And from the opportunity to run my own business while I was at school, it really lit the fire under me as far as, you know, what it takes to be an entrepreneur and how exciting it can be to be an entrepreneur. The income that I was lucky enough to secure during my days in university helped me pay for my tuition and a very healthy, exciting lifestyle as well. But from that, it actually caused me to pivot, to be honest, because again, going into school for economics, thinking I was going to, you know, go and work in finance out of school, I really did reflect a lot when I finished my program, and I realized that I wanted to continue to be an entrepreneur. And all that being said, I like different aspects of the business better than others. And the part that really resonated well with me was the preseason, where we were trying to secure all of the work, you know, to keep our crews busy over the summer. So I decided, instead of focusing on finance when I was finished my undergrad, I wanted to focus on a sales career. Didn't know at that point what that meant or how that looked. And it started off like many others when you're done school, selling office equipment and all of those less than glamorous things. But it led me where I've gone, and I've stayed true to that, I guess, that mission to be building a career in sales. And I've been very thankful that I stuck with that, and more specifically how it led me to real estate sales and how that's benefited my life ever since.
Yeah. So it's you know, one of the great things about being an operator or a leader is that you see, what do I not like? And then what do I like? And so you, like I as well, you know, really fell in love with the people aspect and the sales aspect and the relationship aspect. And you don't really know about that going into university. All you know is the courses you're taking. And all of a sudden, wow, there's this whole space about results economy and making a difference. But if before we jump on to career, what do you still use from your time at Student Works? What lessons do you still use?
Oh, there's quite a few. The one thing that I guess continues to stick out in my mind, because I have to remind myself about this, is just to stay accountable to the plans and the goals, you know, that I've set. And I don't really remember how frequently we had to you know, speak, like Chad and then Richard.
Weekly.
It was weekly. But those weekly calls, that kept me on track. And knowing that I had a responsibility, I guess, to myself, first of all, because I wanted to build a business that was going to be rewarding for me. But I had employees that were going to be counting on me. I had, you know, the GMs that were counting on me because that drove their incomes. And then, you know, you as the owner of the company as well, like it all kind of rippled through. So I think the accountability is what I take from that, is that, you know, we can have a lot of plans and be really sincere in what our desires are. But unless we actually do what we said that we were going to do, and we hold ourselves accountable to actually benchmark how well have we done, what do we need to improve? So I think those lessons really still resonate with me now, is just holding myself accountable to do what I've said that I was going to do and to be my word.
Yeah. Well, no, that's so awesome. And that's something that we still, we think we do it better. We teach that. We think that level of integrity, that commitment, that focus around that. And I'm so glad that that's a lesson, and not surprised given the success that you've had. And it's funny enough, there's actually a best-selling book we found about 6-7 years ago called The Weekly Call by Michael D'Souza. And actually, this book literally describes like 90-95% of what we've been doing for decades. You know, just like, hey, this accountability, this coaching, this analysis, and I love how, you know, sort of, you know, soft and hard you described it. You know, hey, Chad and Richard, two people have been on the pod, rock star people, and they held me accountable. And as well, what can we do better? What can we learn? Right. So it's both things, right? Because that's kind of how life is how do we do better without, you know, kind of, I know, blaming ourselves, you know, and how did you see that?
You know, 100%, like nobody's perfect. Everybody has great intentions and they want to be good people. But going back to those calls and I guess just introducing me to the concept of being coachable.
Yeah.
That's something also in addition to the accountability, like even to this day, I continue to pay good money to hire coaches to help keep me on track. And it's not always, you know, bringing information to me that I had never come across or heard for the first time. It's just, you have to look at your business from a different perspective every so often. And one of the coaches that I worked with for many years, he used to call it big picture planning sessions. And I feel that's very valuable, just to pull yourself from the day to day to make sure that you're looking at the big picture every once in a while and making sure that you're staying on track.
Yeah. And also as well, like, you know, we as people don't see ourselves properly. Like literally, if we look at people, it's like you can see somebody's got a problem. Everyone can see it, but they can't see it. So what, when you have a coach, that person is then going to whisper in that person's ear, here's the problems, you know? And so then, oh, okay, great. We can move forward. We can make progress, right? And nothing wrong. Like you said, everyone's not perfect. Just, it's all about the progress.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So why don't we walk through? So you're right. So many of our past successful people go into, you know, sort of the office, you know, selling office equipment and less so now, but still it's certainly a way to go to get started, get into that B2B sales. So why don't you describe those early sales jobs and what worked, what didn't work, what you were discovering? Because it's one of those things where a lot of times it's like people see someone successful and they say, I want to do that. I want to have a successful career like that, but it's not like a straight line there, you know? So why don't you describe that line for our listeners and leaders?
Sure. That's a really insightful observation, because you're right. Like, I wish that I had known all those years ago that I was destined to be building a career in real estate sales, but it didn't happen exactly like that. So we started again with office equipment, and there's a variety of other industries, but I do look back at those experiences for a lot of what it offered me. Like Pitney Bowes was the company that I first started with. And the sales manager that I had there, he was unbelievable. And I still think about some of the lessons that he taught me. In fact, I remember when I first showed up to the job. So I was just finished school, didn't have a lot of money at that point, didn't have a wardrobe worthy of, you know, talking to like controllers and VPs and all that. So And again, he was really kind about it, but he looked at the way that I was dressed and he had some old suits. And one day he brought like 3 or 4 old suits. He's like, Andy, you really have to dress the part a little bit better. And again, it felt a little superficial at first, but it really made sense too, because you have to feel good and feel confident to project that confidence when you're out there, especially when you're trying to sell yourself and or a product or service. But this is dating myself a little bit, but you know, computers were a thing then, but the sales career that I had at that point wasn't as automated as it is now, as far as like technology helping with things. So we had like manual day timer. And I remember, because it was a publicly traded company, so we had a strong demand of us to be producing a certain amount of results that were forecast to the shareholders and that sort of thing. So there was a lot of pressure coming all the way down the sales line to us that were in the field. So if we didn't have any appointments in our daytime, or we were knocking on doors like all day, every day.
Yeah.
And I was actually reflecting on that somewhat recently, because now when I look at my schedule moving forward, like into any given week, it's pretty jammed. And I'm so thankful that it is, because when you know that you are in demand or you've got things to do and people that want to meet with you, that's such a comforting feeling versus having a completely empty schedule and knowing that it's door after door. But those are the lessons that taught me about work ethic and what it took, you know, to keep my conveyor belt full, to make sure that I always have that critical mass of opportunity so that I can meet my monthly, my quarterly, you know, and my annual forecast. And yes, so all of those things were super valuable to me. The company that I worked at just prior to becoming a realtor, that one actually instilled a lot of focus in sort of the way I was doing things in regards to technology, because they were a lot more forward thinking in regards to technology than other companies were at the time. So they had some proprietary software. So as the salesperson at the time, I had to document in the system every single sales call that I went on so that the other team members could see my conversations. And then when they were responding to calls as they came in, we could all be kind of in sync. So I realized at that point that when I was putting everything into a CRM, then I didn't have to remember anything anymore. And I could do so much more, because when you're trying to do things manually and just keep all of those details organized in your head, it's impossible. And now I don't know what I would do without the technology. With the amount of volume of conversations that I'm having and clients that I've been thankful enough to work with over the years, I can't remember all of that. But if it's at your fingertips, that's what you need. So those are all tools and experiences, I think, that led me toward the career. And I remember, as unhappy as I was in whatever job or industry that I was in, I still loved the sales part of what I was doing. It was just a matter of aligning myself with an industry and a product where I could see the potential that I wanted. Real estate made sense because it was big ticket. And then I was also very interested in from my student works days. Like, I love painting homes and just, you know, beautifying a home and turning something ugly into something that's great. And so working with some builders and investors and families, of course, about a product that I actually enjoy talking about, that was the real, I guess, key for me to happiness, because I've never woken up a single day and not thought I was in the right industry now, because I still have a lot of fun, you know, almost 20 years later.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are a bunch of things. So what had you finally sort of go, hey, I should go give real estate a shot? Or what had you drawn in that direction?
It was strategic. So for the first three or four years, I guess, when I was out of school, it felt like I was jumping from job to job to job, because I was never fully happy with what I was selling or the company that I was representing. And I started to realize that was going to tarnish my resume. It wasn't looking good. It didn't look I could commit to anywhere, but I really wasn't seeing the career that I truly wanted. So there was a point, I think, when I had the thought, well, if I want to stay true to a real estate career, I want to be a little bit more strategic. So I really started to map out, well, what did I want to spend my days doing? And that's when I started to think about, okay, well, if I'm going to be earning commission on something that I'm selling, you know, big ticket seems to make sense. And then I also, more importantly, wanted to align myself in an industry that I really enjoyed. I'm very thankful that a family member of mine, she was in real estate law for many decades, and I saw how she had built her business. And I was interested in kind of what she did. I didn't want to ever be a lawyer, but I saw how she was involving herself with like the real estate sales and seeing the repeat and referral business. And so it was real organic, but very intentional at the same time. It took me about 2 years roughly after making the decision that I wanted to transition over, because I wanted to burn all my bridges when I did get started. So I wanted to save as much as I thought was necessary at the time, where I could go right from day one full time.
Yes.
Not doing it as a part-time hobby. I really wanted to commit to the career in the industry. So that time in advance, I think, really helped me do that. And I look back. So I'm very thankful I was able to do it that way.
And then one question a lot of times, because one spot that many alumni go to is real estate. You know, so yeah. So rather than me surmise, because I'm not a real estate agent and I just look, what similarities do you see between running a franchise at Student Works and being a successful sales rep in the real estate business?
There's a lot of similarities with the actual sales process, because again, I'm meeting with families more often than not. I do work with builders and investors, but more often than not, I'm in people's homes. I'm sitting across the dinner table from them. I'm trying to understand what they're hoping to accomplish, and then seeing if I could offer value to them in getting them where they need to go. So that is so similar. I remember, and I'm not sure exactly how the sales cycle goes now, because again, things have changed and technology's probably helped a lot. Even like with the way that we secured leads back when I was an operator is probably a lot different than how you're able to now. But
we still do a bunch of canvassing, but you're right, over the internet and Facebook sites and all the, there's a lot of other ways that we're getting them versus when you used to operate, for sure.
Yeah. And then very similar too, in that I recall, again, when I was an operator, we'd obviously collect a deposit because we needed to buy materials and things, but we had to do a good job in order to get paid.
Yes.
And to pay our employees and just to make the world go around in our world. So as a realtor, like, all of the cost and the risk financially is on me, because unless I perform and I can deliver on the promises that I've made, I'm actually going to have lost money by taking on a client if I'm unsuccessful in helping them. So very similar in that way. When we are lucky to partner with families that trust us, much like the families that are trusting your operators, it's really empowering, because then they kind of free me up just to do what I'm good at, which is helping them buy or sell. And for your operators, obviously, you know, creating an environment, whether it's inside or outside painting, you know, they're going to be the professional that's been hired to do what they were hired to do. And
absolutely,
it's really nice when you can feel respected and appreciated for what you've been brought in to accomplish. So very similar in that way. Obviously, there's constant, like, even though I've been in the business since 2005, every year, I really don't know yet where all of my clients are going to come from. Usually I'm very thankful and fortunate that a lot of repeat and referral business come, but I have to plan on new ground all the time, because unless I'm willing to put in that effort to find families that need my help, it's just not going to come together and I won't be able to accomplish sort of the goals that are important to me and my business and then for my family as well. So that's very similar to each year, despite the successes of the past, you can't ever like rest on your laurels.
You can't rest.
Yeah, you have to keep your head down and make sure that you are responsible for where you end up.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I know a lot of times early on, and I know we've talked earlier as well before we got the mics going, is that the vast majority of your weeks are full, and that you know that there's this group of people who refer you and past clients, and I'm sure early on a whole bunch of it was knocking on doors, right, and opening up. And that's another piece that our operators have in common, is we are good at opening a conversation, and I think that's such an important skill to have in business.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I was actually on a webinar earlier today, and they're talking about the difference between, you know, marketing and sales, and marketing finding the opportunities. You know, when we have those opportunities, we can convert those opportunities into sales. So it's truly important, I think, to understand that nothing happens overnight. And again, you can have some immediate successes and you can be very lucky and things can go very well, like from the early days. But those early years and the amount of cold calling that I did and for sale by owners and open houses and all those things that I had to do to meet the people that I now know that are tremendously loyal to me, had I not been willing to do those things, I wouldn't have been benefiting today. So it's a situation where you definitely have to put in your time and you have to put in the effort. But if you stick with it, you know, regardless of industry, if you stick with anything long enough and you're good at it, I feel that you will eventually, you know, benefit from work from the past or the effort of the past.
Yeah, it's in the future we'll end up being an overnight success story, right? It's like, that's holy, great. You know. Yeah. So no, but it's so true. And again, it's all these good decisions, that accountability, that hard work shows up. So no, that's awesome. Hey leaders, I hope you are enjoying this podcast. As we approach and surpass 300 episodes, well over 95% of the leaders that we have interviewed have been alumni of the StudentWorks Management Program. It has been an honor to participate in their development over the years. Starting now, and only for the fall months, we will be on campus at universities and colleges in Ontario, Quebec, and the East Coast, interviewing students who think they have what it takes to start their first business and get started down the path of entrepreneurship. If you are interested in being a leader in our program or know someone who does, please go to the show notes and hit StudentWorks and get sent to a landing page to apply. There is a bold StudentWorks that you can hit to go to a landing page to apply. Thanks so much. Back to the show. And so why RE/MAX? Why did you choose RE/MAX?
That's a good question. I've been with them since 2007. Actually, I remember my oldest daughter's 25 now. When she asked me at the time, because I started with Global Banker, which is a great brand locally as well. And when I moved over to RE/MAX, I remember her asking me at the time, and I guess she was probably 8 or 9 years old. She said, well, why did you switch? And I said, well, you know, if we think about it in terms that you'd recognize. So if Coldwell Banker was like Dr. Pepper, then RE/MAX is like Coca-Cola. And it was amazing. Like overnight, I had so many people congratulating me when I joined the brand for the promotion and for being accepted and all of those things. And I've seen that time and time again, and I've heard more than once. And I wish that I wasn't going to share this story, but I've heard, like, when I've met a stranger and they've hired me, I've heard them on the phone talking with their friends and they'll say things like, oh, I hired RE/MAX to sell my house. It wasn't always I hired Andy from RE/MAX to sell my house. So it was the perception of the brand is really, really powerful. When people see that balloon, they don't have to wonder what it is, you know, so the barriers to entry as far as their mind space, it's smaller because they get what I do without any explanation required. There's some other really successful brokerages locally that don't have that working in their favor. And I got to imagine, you know, just adding any more layers to a conversation that it just doesn't seem helpful to me. And in my mind, I would be very hard pressed to stray from that brand because of the recognition. And it is costly to be involved with Remax versus others, but I think it's money well spent, in my opinion, because of that recognition that you get and the brand awareness.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And then a sales representative versus a broker. So you're a broker. What's that distinction, et cetera?
Again, another good question. Interestingly, when I did get my broker's license, I also had people congratulating me at the time for the promotion. Because it's interesting because people that aren't in the industry, they don't understand completely the behind the scenes. That makes it such a great question that you've asked. So as a sales representative or a broker, unless I'm going to open my own brokerage, by law, I have to work through a broker or a brokerage. So when I was licensed as a sales representative, I had no choice. I had to work through the brokerage that I saw as the best fit for me. When I got my broker's license, it was for a few reasons. I was very excited about demonstrating to myself and others, I guess, that this was my career, that I was committed to this career. So that's the highest level or one of the higher levels of education that you can get and licenses that you can get. So it just showed, again, to myself and to others that I was taking it as seriously as you could. So there was that. I've always wanted to, I guess, challenge myself too and just get better and better at whatever it is I'm doing. And it felt like that was a step that meant to me as well. Now, the benefit of having that license is that if I ever chose to open my own brokerage, I could. I don't have plans for that, but I could if things change, which is amazing. If I decided that I wanted to take on the job as a broker manager within an existing brokerage, I could do that as well. Again, I don't have plans for that either. So I'm basically still doing the same job when I'm facing clients as I always have. There are a lot more opportunities for me now if I decide that I wanted to, I guess, tweak my focus, which it's nice to have options.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, I think just the term broker puts you in a different just conversation with customers, you know, just because I would think that I'm a pretty knowledgeable about things, you know, and I read a lot, I learn a lot, I know about the real estate. And it just, and again, it's there's something like it's the next level. Right. That's kind of, you know, and a lot of times, you know, again, we've had past operators who are in the real estate industry, and quite often they'll be quote unquote brokers, although they're sales representatives and they say the same thing, but it does set something aside about how they're operating.
Yeah. And further to that point, I have had people hire me over the years where they've specifically told me, I hired you because you're a broker.
Yes. Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me. A difference to them. And again, I was still doing the exact same job, you know, and I did have a different license. I didn't feel that I was necessarily more skilled than I was the day before I actually got the license, but it does mean something, I think, to people when they see that. And I feel great about it. You know, I like calling myself a real estate broker. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you learned other things that you wouldn't have known otherwise. And there just is, you know, and then one of the things about being human, I always like to say is it's like, we learn things and then it's almost like we just take it for granted. I do that so often. It's like, oh, read another book. No, and it's like, I take it for granted. Well, everyone must know those things. No, Chris, not everybody knows those things. And again, the things that you learned in becoming a broker are just next level, and that impacts your clients. I'm sure it does.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And neither of our industries are rocket science, but we're dealing with people. Yeah, they don't have as intimate a knowledge as we do, certainly. And when you're in anything for a long period of time, you're going to have picked up things. And when I've been hired by people, they're not hiring me necessarily just for the one job. It's the years of experience that I'm bringing to that situation and my ability to help based on that experience and just having the reps, you know, under my belt from previous.
100%. And so what about, you know, we've been talking about a lot of good things and good results that you've been having in your life. What do you look back on big mistakes or failures or setbacks, Andy, and how you look at that?
There's definitely a couple of things. One goes back to the early part of my career, because ego gets in the way a lot. And I was so focused on building my real estate business and succeeding and not asking for help that would have been very valuable for me at the time. So the one lesson, or the lessons that I maybe could have taken, if when I was new, instead of being an independent contractor and working on my own and like a solo practitioner. Had I joined a team at that point, so that I could have been fed a little bit more regularly, because the first 5 years, they were really, really tough. It took me about that long to even match the income that I was earning prior to being a realtor. And then ever since, it obviously has treated our family very well. But in those early days, had I been less proud of my, I guess, desires to do it all on my own, and I had joined a team, I would have learned a lot of things much more quickly than I did just, you know, going through it on my own. I did get hire coaches all the way back to that point, but it's very different because we're in a business where to do really well, you have to do a good amount of volume. And unless you're actually immersed in that world where you're forced to do a lot of volume and have a lot of open files at that time, you don't really get used to that. So had I joined a team earlier on, I would have been working a lot of files, and I would have been, that would have been normal to me instead of just kind of slowly, because it was a real slow burn. So working up to that point. And so I'm thankful now that I have had those periods where I've been extremely busy. And so that is where you reset, I guess, your mental paradigms on what is normal, you know, as you break through certain ceilings. So that would have been something that would have benefited me, I think. And then somewhat recently, and again, going back to, I guess, where I'm at in my business, and I'm very thankful and fortunate that I do have a lot of clients using me again and referring me to friends. But sometimes the success that we have as a result of the past, it enables us to be lazier than we should be.
Yes. Yeah.
So I fell victim of that a couple of years ago, where there was just so much low hanging fruit and clients that wanted to work with me, and I didn't have to work very hard to find them, that I took advantage of that and I serviced, you know, the heck out of them, and I did a great job for them. But I didn't continue to do for a little while some of the or execute on some of the disciplines, I guess, that got me to that point. And that's a real common experience too, I think, in our industry. It's the peaks and valleys. You know, we're prospecting to get our clients, keep the conveyor belt full. We get busy, and then we're too busy to prospect. And then all of a sudden we run out of clients, and then it's like that hamster wheel. So I think just reminding myself, despite the number of years that I've been in business, I have goals. Like, I want to retire at some point, and there's certain, you know,
financial benchmarks, yeah, you want to have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to still, even to this day, keep my head down if I want to accomplish those. And organically, I might get there just sort of on my own. But I think if I'm a lot more intentional and I stick to the fundamentals, and that was something that I opened my eyes about. And I guess it was maybe about 3 or 4 years ago that I really started to realize that I had strayed a little bit further from the disciplined path than I wanted. So I got myself on as quickly as I could. And I'm very thankful that I did, because I think it's going to enable us to retire a lot more comfortably. And I'm just happier overall, because I feel like I'm a little bit more in control of my destiny than floating through and just hoping for others to bring me opportunity.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. That's a fantastic share. Like, I think one of the great things about StudentWorks is regular coaches. And this right now as well, we've got, you know, 330 operators. So there's this huge swill of accountability, cooperation, competitiveness. We're so-and-so on the leaderboard. Let's go chase him or her. Like, so, and then all of a sudden I'm in my office on my own, and it's like, what's going to keep me accountable? How do I set these accountability structures up for myself on my own? And so again, you're going, okay, now I see it. And here's what I'm going to do. And I've got an outside coach, and these are the things I'm going to check off so that we can achieve our goals. But it's really easy to lose touch with that, and especially, quote unquote, on your own. Right. And that's what you are. So, and by the way, as well, it also speaks to the advantage of those teams that they have. A lot of those real estate teams, you know, people have teams, they're working together because it's easier to work together. Most people find the same thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. And when you're trying to stay on the path and going back to motivation, like there's all sorts of things that will motivate people, and everyone's different. And yeah. I really tried to understand and lean into my personality profile to understand what actually motivates me. Because when I was younger, it was money and commissions, you know, that unlimited income and potential. Not as motivated by money anymore, because I'm comfortable.
Yes,
exactly. And that was sort of like a double-edged sword.
Yes, the point
where your business is very healthy.
Yeah,
it's not that driving force, because it's not you know, feast or famine really at that point anymore. So you really have to dive deep. And I know there's many books and I can see them all on your shelf. And I'm sure we've read a lot of the same ones, but you really have to understand what motivates you and sort of what your why is, just to really stay as focused on, you know, the day-to-day as necessary, I think, to continue to be successful, because it's easy to do for a short period of time. But when you're out there every single day for many years, it's easy to get derailed a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can tell as well, one of the things that you're doing as well, bringing in, and you really feel, I can tell you feel just again, the connection to the families that you help and the people that you help. Right. And that's like, and I know we both share that. It's like, oh yeah, that feels so good. Now helping people, right? Because making money, not nearly as motivating and just like, okay, let's get up. So that's awesome. That's awesome. What a great answer. So what did you need to change about yourself to become such a value creator? If you think about graduating Laurier after the program, what did you need to change, Andy?
I think I had to understand that in order to be successful in the long term, you have to focus on people other than yourselves. Like, you really have to be bringing value to whoever it is that you're trying to work with. And I think, and there are some real estate trainers that are very transactional, you know, where they just want you to plow new ground and meet strangers, and they're not really interested in coaching you to maintain a database and to keep those relationships going. But I think it's so important to put your clients' needs ahead of everyone else's, including your own. And then just, you know, through, you know, reciprocity, it's going to come back in spades, you know. So just, I guess, pouring every amount of energy and desire and ability into helping your clients. Whereas, again, when we're young and we're trying to find our path in the world, we're very, and teenagers and young adults, you know, we tend to focus a lot on sort of what we want and where we want to go and all those things. And that's important. But when we're out there trying to bring value to the world, we have to help other people, and we really have to put their needs ahead of everyone else's. So I think that is something that I had to learn. And as I've gotten a little bit older, and it's actually interesting when you're talking about some of the clients and the satisfaction that I get from that. And again, I'm dating myself a bit, but now some of the people that I helped like 10, 15 or more years ago, their kids were like literally toddlers at the time, and now I'm helping their kids buy their first places and stuff. And that's just such an amazing feeling, knowing that I impressed, you know, the parents so much like 15 years ago that they're not only remembering me, but they're going to put their children's future, as far as, you know, the home ownership, in my hands too. And that just, it's hard to describe how great that feels. But And going back to those early days, I had commented that the first 5 years were real tough. But I think part of the reason why it was tough is that I didn't want to go at, like, there was lots of commissions out there that I could have gone after, but I wanted to lay the foundations in my career and in my business where I felt good about it. And it was going to be a foundation that was going to pay dividends moving forward. And I think because I did take my time to do things right, and I could have done things a little bit differently, as I commented, but just laying that foundation of treating clients the way that I like to, and that I would want to be treated, I think that has what has led to a lot of the successes now. Because again, once you have a certain business philosophy, you know, that's going to stick with you moving forward. And if you continue to do a good job, even at a higher volume, it's still going to be the level of service that you've always wanted and hoped to deliver. So,
yeah, no, I love that. I love that. Yeah. Just, yeah, no, that, no, again, it's, you know, especially if you're doing something for a long, long time, just the reasons we do it, that it fills us up, is really, really important, you know? So what about habits? What key habits would someone want to steal from you, Andy?
Well, there's a lot of really important things, I think, that I've incorporated into my schedule. So Darren Hardy, I'm sure that you've read some of his books.
Compound Effect.
Yeah. Like, that one is a real basic example. Like, you have to do small, you know, what seems like relatively insignificant things on an ongoing basis, and then you'll eventually benefit from that, you know, through the compound effect. So I think creating a schedule that makes sense and sticking to it and doing the things that are most important. Like, when I map out my day, I color code my calendar so that I understand, okay, these are the revenue generating activities that need to be done today. These are the admin activities that need to be done. This is time for me. This is time for loved ones. And I want to see at the end of the week that there's a good mixture of all of those colors. Obviously, if I'm neglecting the revenue generating activities, which sometimes are the least enjoyable things to be doing, And it's so easy just to get caught up in thinking that you're busy, but not doing the right things to drive business. So I think just always critiquing myself on how effective, you know, I am. The coach I'm working with now on Friday afternoons, he gets me to reflect every Friday afternoon on how successful I feel that I was that week in accomplishing things that I had set out to do. At the end of the month, I'm reflecting on that as well. And then certainly we do that quarterly and then semi-annually and annually. And it's really important, I think, just to again, benchmark yourself that you're doing those things. The other thing too, that I learned quite a while ago, because for a lot of entrepreneurs, we're workaholics, and it's really easy to let life kind of get out of sequence. And, you know, work-life balance, it's a bit of a cliche term, and it's really hard to accomplish. And whether or not it's something that could ever be fully attained, I couldn't say, but I do think that it's important to set that time aside for yourself. Otherwise, you're going to get burnt out and you're going to be very resentful. And so again, a few years back, again, I really focused on blocking time for myself, whether it was golf or time with family or vacation, whatever it was, like that was my priority. And then work would fit in around that versus the other way, you know, because I was letting it be the other way for far too long, I feel. And I wasn't getting as much joy from life as I am now because I've got things I think in the right sequence.
And also, I think your business is going to pull and going to pull you away in evenings and weekends. And so blocking out, this is when I'm available to my family. This is when I'm available. Like golf's easy because you could fit that in. But it's still a priority. But you know what I mean? It's easier. But those weekends. So it really is. Yes, this matters. Yes, I'm going to prioritize my kids, my wife, my family, these different types of things. And because if I don't stand up for them, it easily can take them away.
Oh, for sure. And what I often will do now is I'll put personal time or whatever it is that I want to do, I'll put it in as an appointment, whether it's an appointment with myself or if it's an appointment with my wife or it's an appointment with my friends. And if people want me, and I'm thankful that they want my time, that's not an option. Like that time is booked.
Yes, that's exactly. Oh, I'm seeing someone, I'm booked for that time, right? And then and just like, oh, okay. And they don't know that you're booked to go have dinner with good friends. You're booked. And then, okay, when can we meet you? What's available to you? Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and they never ask. And even the clients that I've had, and these are the clients that I appreciate the most, the ones that will say things like, oh, I'm sorry for taking you away from your family at dinner time, or I'm sorry for taking you out on a Saturday, because they understand that I'm a human and that I do have a life. But people don't care. You know, they just want to know what options you do have. But again, if you're booked, in fact, I think they want to see that you're busy.
Yes, absolutely.
They want to feel like your only client, but they don't want to be your only client.
Yes. That's a great line. Yes, so true. So Andy, before we go to our last question, anything else you wanted to share? And I know you want to share what was in your closet and your wife saying, why is this still in your closet, Andy? So come share it.
I just wanted to let all the people listening to the podcast and like the operators that are out there now, like have an amazing time running this business. You are going to gain so much from it, like financially, but just socially, just the connections that you'll make with other operators and your employees and even yourself, Chris. Like I started in 97 was the first summer that I did this. And we're talking here in 2024. Like that's amazing. So just enjoy yourself, work hard, and you are really going to be thankful for that. And even if, you know, a painting business is not for you, like when you're done school, you have learned so much about what it takes to be an entrepreneur, and you're going to apply that to whatever industry that you're more passionate about, you know, at that point. And so you're so lucky, I think, to be either considering this opportunity or to be taking part in the opportunity, because it's going to pay dividends, I think, for the rest of your working days. So,
yeah. And I know before I started, Andy showed me his Student Works shirt that he still has.
Yeah, let me grab it.
Just awesome. So much fun.
So I've had this, yes. Well, my last
25 years.
Yeah, 99. So, and my wife, she thinks I'm a pack rat. But when she looked at the class, she goes, why are you keeping that? And I was thinking about it. I really wasn't 100% sure. But when you invited me to do the podcast, the reason why I kept it is because my experience with, you know, the summer management program, it meant so much to my life that this is memento of those days and sort of what put me on the path that I am now. So I'm glad that I still have it. I'm not sure I would still fit.
Oh, awesome, Andy. So final question. When you think of a leader, what do you think of? When you think of a leader of tomorrow?
I think someone that is prepared to lead by example. There are far too many people, and I've had, you know, some managers in the past, and, you know, the working in corporate setting was not for me because of this, but they want to tell you what to do, but you know in your heart that they're not willing to do that themselves. So I think just leading by example, and again, the golden rule, like just treating people how you want to be treated. I think seeing that from a leader is the best that you could get and the best that you could give if you were a leader in your respective field. So
true. That's awesome.
Hey leaders, I hope you enjoyed this episode. By now, you are aware that we work with ambitious students every single year to not only help them run their first successful business, but to further their development as a leader and give them an unfair advantage in the future over their counterparts. It's why starting now and only for the next few weeks, we'll be on campuses across Ontario, Quebec, and the East Coast, interviewing students who think they have what it takes to start their first business and get started down their path of entrepreneurship. If you think you have what it takes or know someone who might be interested, visit leaderspodcast.ca/apply and start your application process today. Once again, it's leaderspodcast.ca/apply, and I can't wait to see you on the other side.